Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's survival show, helping you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want on your own terms and to strengthen your resolve. We make survival simple, not extreme. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to episode 25. It's Monday, October 5th, 2009, and as quite often is the case, I record a lot of these shows while I'm driving. I do a lot of driving for business, and this is my opportunity to take a little bit of windshield time and give you some of my thoughts on practical survival. And if you're a first-time listener, I want to welcome you and let you know you have tuned in to the Voice of Reason. In a chaotic world, we make survival simple, not extreme, and this is practical stuff. Not too much in conspiracy theory stuff here, but we're just going to talk about everyday living and how to make a more secure life. So thanks for tuning in. Also to all of my international listeners, that group of listeners continues to grow. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate you as well. And of course, all of my listeners stateside, I'm bringing this to you from North Texas. Frisco, to be exact. I'm actually on Interstate 35, not too far from a town called Denton, Texas, headed up to Oklahoma to get a little bit of business done. Anyway, what are we going to talk about? Well, the main topic of episode 25 is that I got a lot of good feedback on episode 23, which was on balancing your life. That was real popular. I got a lot of good emails and good comments on that, and a couple people asked me to expand a little bit on that. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. If you remember episode 23, I talked about five ways that we let our lives get out of balance and how that affects our ability to become modern survivalists. It also affects our ability to live a peaceful life. And that's kind of a prerequisite for today's show. So if you haven't listened to episode 23, let me go ahead and encourage you to hit pause or hit stop on this show. Go back and queue up episode 23. Listen to it. It's not very long, but I talk about five ways we let our lives get out of whack. And that is, number one, emotional. Number two, physical. Number three, financial. We get out of balance financially easily. Number four, spiritual. And number five, organizational. So those five areas of bringing your life in balance are important. I'm going to expand on two of them today. Emotional and financial. Before I get into that, I do want to get a couple of announcements out of the way before getting into the main topics. First of all, our forum. If you haven't joined our forum yet, please consider joining. Go to todayssurvival.com/forum, or you can go to the main page, todayssurvival.com, and click the forum page. That'll get you to where you want to go. Why should you do that? Well, you've heard me say many times, if you've listened to some of my other shows, that I really believe that small minds are the kind of people that talk about things and material objects. And I call those types of people small-minded people because it's a narrow focus. And that's all they talk about is their material objects. You know, what kinds of things can they acquire and games and, you know, cars and things like that. Average minds, people who are just average run-of-the-mill thinkers, well, they talk about people. And they throw in some gossip, and they're all worried about what other people are doing and saying about them. But great minds, they talk about ideas, concepts to help better themselves. And that's what you're going to find in our forum. You're going to find a lot of great minds talking about ways to live a more secure and a more independent life. And I don't care if you don't become a member right now. Just surf our forum and look at some of the topics. We've got over 200 topics on how to live a better life on there. And even if you just start reading and just look at it for a half an hour a week, I think you're going to gain a lot of valuable insight. So that's one announcement I wanted to mention. And the other is our sponsor of the show, Personal Senior Monitoring. I know the gentleman who owns that company, www.personalseniormonitoring.com. What is that? Well, if you have a senior citizen in your life that lives alone, or even if they're still living with their spouse, but you want them to be able to get help in case something happens to them and get help, and they can get some help relatively quickly, at the push of a button, Personal Senior Monitoring offers that service. And don't forget to take care of our seniors. That's part of survival as well. Our senior citizens are treasured assets. They're full of a lot of knowledge, and they also are our loved ones. So don't forget to take care of them and check out Personal Senior Monitoring. All right, that's it for the announcements. Now let's dive into the main topic. The first part of getting your life in balance that I want to expand on is emotional. But first, before I do that, I got to ask you a question. It's something I haven't done in any of my shows yet. How is everybody? How are you doing today? How's your life going right now? I have a specific purpose for asking that question. You know, it's interesting. I love to ask people, how are you? How are you doing? How's business? How's life? How's the family, the kids? You know, standard stuff like that. You ever notice when you ask somebody, how are you? What's the answer you typically get? What do they usually say? They say, oh, great, right? Everything's fine. How's the family? Oh, the family's good. How's the spouse? Good. How's the kids? Oh, well, you know, some challenges, but okay. Now, you know they're lying, right? Nobody's life is always going great. But that's the standard answer they give you. How you doing? Great! You know, I've found that there's two things that you have to be a survivor. Number one, you have to have a good attitude. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. And number two, you got to be honest. And not only honest with other people, but you also have to be honest with who? You guessed it. You got to be honest with yourself. So honesty and attitude are two important qualities. Well, you know what's interesting is whenever you ask somebody, how you doing? They go, oh, it's great. Is that always being honest? Are they being honest when they say that? No. But why do they say that? Because they want to be perceived as having a good attitude. And conversely, if you went up to them and said, oh, hey, how's life treating you? And if they go, oh, man, it really sucks. It's terrible. It's just, things just couldn't be worse. It's just awful. You know, I just can't stand it. Well, then they're perceived as having a bad attitude, aren't they? So I want you to try a little experiment. The next time somebody comes up to you, says, hey, Joe, how you doing? Hey, Sally, how's it going? I want you to look them in the eye and smile and just say, unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. See, that'll cover it either way, won't it? You know, you got to have a sense of humor, folks. You got to kind of mix it up a little bit. And this kind of just helps keep them a little bit off balance. Hey, how you doing? Unbelievable. May sound corny, but try it. It's a lot of fun. You'd be amazed the looks that you get from people. They don't know what you're talking about. Unbelievably good, unbelievably bad. Try that little experiment. Just tell them where you got it from and tell them you listen to some clown that does a podcast that taught you that. All right, let's get into the areas of balance and the two that I'm going to expand on. Let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about money. Okay, popular subject, especially in today's world. Let's talk about get your go-to-town money. What is go-to-town money? Well, let me explain that. I have a little concept called go-to-town money. You have a lot more power, and you have a lot more security in your life. And even when you're negotiating something, part of surviving today is being able to negotiate. And I'm not just talking about business transactions. I'm really talking about life transactions. Millions of people out there stay in jobs that they hate. You know, they settle for less than they should get. You know, so let's talk about jobs for a minute. You know why I think a lot of people are stuck in jobs they don't hate? Because they don't have any go-to-town money. Let me tell you what my definition is. It's enough money to allow you to face change and be comfortable about it. In other words, you know, the more money you have saved up, the more comfortable and the more you're going to be willing to embrace change and the more confidence that you're going to have. It's not all about money. But as I mentioned in episode 23, money won't buy you happiness, but it lets you arrive at all of your problems pretty comfortable, doesn't it? So whatever it takes to make you feel strong enough to risk losing what you have, that's pretty much what your go-to-town money. It's kind of also called holdout money. In other words, how much do you need to be able to hold out for what you want from the situation? And stay with me. I'm going to explain. You know, for those of you that are students of Dave Ramsey, the Total Money Makeover Program, as I am, he's a big proponent of getting to a situation to where you've got 6 months of expenses saved in the bank. Me and my family do. And let me tell you, you have a lot of power when you're in that situation. Think about that job that you hate, that you can't stand right now. Well, if you had 6 months of expenses in the bank, maybe even 8 or 9 months, wouldn't you embrace making a job change a little bit more? Wouldn't you go in to work with a little bit of a different attitude? Wouldn't you think, hey, maybe I don't have to take this crap that they're giving me? All right? Maybe I don't have to work for these bozos much longer. And it gives you a greater sense of confidence to be able to start putting alternative plans in place to maybe go start your own business, find another job somewhere. And, you know, some of you might be saying, Bob, what on earth are you talking about? We got one of the worst economies since the Great Depression. Give me a break. You know, it's bad economies like this where some of the greatest fortunes have been made. People reinvent themselves. But first, you've got to have your go-to-town money. So let me explain a little bit further. Let's talk about negotiating for a minute. If you have enough go-to-town money, it allows you to have some strength. You're coming from a position of strength. And it lets you allow and establish the position to win a fair shake at the negotiating table. There's very few people can make a convincing show of strength if they're bankrupt. You know, most of us couldn't pull that off. Eventually, if you're bankrupt, you're going to give yourself away. Financial weakness shows in a lot of little ways. It shows in your eyes. It shows in the choice of words that you use. It shows in your tone of voice. It shows in some of your unconscious mannerisms. And again, I'm talking about negotiating here. So the person on the other side that's negotiating against you, they often know what you're feeling just by the body language, because you're bankrupt and they can tell it and they can sense it. So that forces them to say, well, you know, take it or leave it. And then fortunately, because we're bankrupt, we take it. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to just leave it and have that walk away power? That's what go to town money means. And in thousands of negotiations every day, some people get less for one reason. They get less of what they're asking for because they don't have enough go to town money. Others in negotiation, they get a lot more for one reason, because they do have that strength position. And normally, it's been proven time and time again. And I took a negotiating class, and I found this out. Normally, the deciding factor in any negotiations is whether a certain individual has enough internal strength. I guess that's the way I'm trying to put it. Internal strength to convince the other party that you're not going to take less than what you feel like you should have or have a right to. And in most cases, this boils down pretty much to whether you have enough go-to-town money. The courage that you have in negotiation, I believe, is one part guts and nine parts confidence. So if you're in a job you just want to get the heck out of, here's what you do. First thing you need to do is make sure that you've got, and figure out what your nut is, okay? What is your nut that you have to crack every month? This is where a written budget is very important. Writing everything down so you can sort it all out and say, okay, well, my nut is X amount of dollars. That's what I've got to crack every month just to exist. Multiply it by 6. Save in every way possible. Sell stuff in every way, everything you can sell that you don't need, to very quickly get to that goal of 6 months of expenses in the bank. And keep working that job. You can stick it out. You can, even no matter how miserable it is, you can hang in there for however long it takes you to get that 6 months of income in the bank. But once you're there, and even while you're working towards that goal, start looking for alternative opportunities out there. Even if they pay a little bit less. Sometimes it's good to take another job that's paying a little bit less just to keep your sanity. I've done this just because it was so miserable where I was working. But here's where the key comes in, and here's where it's nice to have some money stored up. Let's say you had to take a job making only 75% of what you were making. If you've got that other 25% of your expenses socked away, that buys you more time. It gives you the ability to have more go-to-town money, more walk-away power, and it'll be a little bit more choosy about what kind of a job you take next. And the same thing applies in life, and it applies in a survival situation, and it applies in what we do every single day in our lives. It even applies when you're buying stuff. The way it applies when you're making purchases is it takes worry out of the equation. And don't ever take worries into a major negotiation or a major purchase negotiation. Worry weakens your resolve. Worry clouds your mind. It doesn't let you think clearly when you're trying to make a job decision, a purchase decision. It gives the other party an edge. Now, if 6 months worth of expenses is just too lofty of a goal, if you say, gosh, Bob, I don't know, you know, that's a little too much right now. All right, here's what I want you to do. Work out a written budget. And then let's say you feel confident that you've got enough bargaining strength if you had enough cash for, let's say, 1 month. Okay, that's not much, but let's say you feel comfortable that you'd feel much more powerful that if you had enough saved up for 1 month, that's you're going to increase your confidence level. Okay, make your decision as to how much money that is and go open up a special savings account. And the savings account is just for that purpose. It's your go-to-town money savings account. And start putting a little bit away in there. I don't care if it's 10 bucks a week, 15 bucks a week. You know, you'd be amazed. Saving money gets addicting. And pretty soon you start figuring out more ways to save money and more way to build that go-to-town money account, because you want to get to that 1 month to where you can say, all right, for 30 days, I have enough money to pay the bills. And boy, I tell you what, I've been acting like a good prepper, and I've also got a couple months worth of food socked away. So I'm in pretty good shape. Now that money that's in that account becomes untouchable for any other purpose. And by the way, let me mention things like storing food. Storing food, I consider kind of an intangible go-to-town money. You know, it's food you don't have to go out and buy if something happens to you, like the loss of a job or whatever. It's food that you're not going to have to go out and buy for 30 days, 2 months, 90 days, 6 months, however, whatever amount that you've got stored up. So that's intangible go-to-town money. And what's in your bank is your actual hardcore cash go-to-town money. And, you know, also, too, let me add, nothing beats good, cold, hard cash in a savings account to give you confidence. And, you know, because I'm in sales for a profession, I learned a long time ago a pretty important fact in being successful as a salesperson, and basically this applies to life. The best chance I have of getting a sale is when I don't need it. When I can go see somebody and they can get the feeling from me in about 30 seconds that I really don't need to make this sale, that I'm not desperate, I've noticed I close a lot more business that way. People respond to that because I'm not putting pressure on them, because I'm thinking, hey, I don't need your business. You know, I mean, if you're going to jack me around, I just don't need your business. Well, that's the same feeling you get when you've got money in the bank and when you've got food stored up. You're not going through life with a sense of desperation. And it's a weird phenomenon, but it works. More things start to come your way when you can walk around with a sense of confidence, like, man, I own this place, you know? I mean, hey, I'm on top of my game here because I got money saved up, I got food stored, I'm prepared for a disaster if something happens. And I just don't have to take your crap, whoever you are and whatever you're doing to me, because, you know, I can weather whatever you're going to throw at me. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I want to warn you about something. When you start doing stuff like this, you're going to have a smaller group of friends. There is a downside to this. And that is, you're going to have a smaller group of friends. Because misery loves company. And when you're down in the dirt, doesn't it kind of seem like you tend to get a lot more people around you that are also down in the dirt, and they want to talk about it. And that's all they want to do is wallow in the mud of misery. You know, I have a philosophy. You know, don't talk about your problems to other people. Don't talk about your problems. You know why? You know what happens when you talk about your problems? 80% of the people you tell don't care, and the other 20% are actually happy to hear it. Because misery loves company, or they just don't give a rip. And they might give you lip service and go, yeah, 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 oh gosh, that's just too bad. I'm so sorry to hear about that. And they're thinking, I just can't wait for this person to quit talking to me about all their problems. Again, as I mentioned, beware of the slurpers. Now, don't take me the wrong way. I'm not saying don't lend a hand. You know, if nothing else, I'm the opposite. I like to lend a hand way too much sometimes. Because I start to feel sorry for people when they have problems and they want to talk to me about it. And, you know, for those of you who are listening to this show that know me personally, you know I've had my share of problems as well. And I've needed some people to talk to. And some of you have been there to talk to me about it. And you're probably thinking, you're probably either one of those 80% that don't care or one of the 20% that were happy to hear it. You just didn't want to tell me, right? It's okay. Go ahead and admit it. Sometimes people just need to vent. Listen to them. And at the same time, set yourself up so that you have that feeling of confidence, knowing you can weather whatever storm comes your way. This is how you start to build emotional balance. And getting back to negotiating for a minute, because I got a little bit off on a tangent there. There are three questions that are going to come into play that I learned in the negotiating class that I took several years ago. Three questions that the other person that you're negotiating with is going to be asking in their mind. The first question they're going to ask is, gee, do I have a good economic reason to do business or to work with this guy? You know, is there a really good reason to work with him? The other thing they're going to be asking is it reasonable what he's asking me to do? And the third is an emotional question. They're asking themselves emotionally, well, you know, do I really want to meet their requests? What's in it for me? People always ask, what's in it for me? They may not ask you that out loud, although I've had people ask me, You know, hey, Bob, what you're offering, what's in it for me? Most of the time, they're going to be thinking that silently. And decisions are made emotionally, folks. Purchasing decisions, life decisions, let's face it. We make them emotionally. Then we justify them and back them up with logic, right? Most of what you decide, you decide it for emotional reasons, and then all of a sudden all this logic starts coming out of you, justifying what you did and why you did it. And even if it was a bad decision, you'll back it up with logic. So I hope I've given you a few ideas there to think about in terms of negotiating and having a more position of power in your life, because this permeates. It's not just this doesn't just apply to business. This applies to life in general. And it helps to keep you emotionally in balance. Now, there's another aspect to keeping emotionally in balance. And also this will actually permeate into other areas of your life as well. And that's dealing with angry people. Do you know any angry people? I asked that question on purpose because, sure, we all have angry people. And let me tell you what, if there's an emergency, you're going to deal with a lot of angry people, but you might even be dealing with some angry folks right now in your life. And I've taken an anger management course before. I've had some issues in my life. And let me share with you some of the things that I've learned. And this really helps to not only calm you down, but to calm them down. You have to realize that when there's anger going on, there's really three basic situations that take place. Either you're in the stronger position than the angry person is. You know, for example, maybe you're the boss, or maybe you're the parent, and the angry person is one of your employees or one of your kids. The other scenario is that you and the person who's angry are on equal footing. You know, maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's a friend, a customer, or some kind of relationship that you have, and both of you are pretty much kind of on an equal position to each other. And then the third is the angry person sometimes is in a stronger position than you. Maybe the angry person is your boss. Okay? And they're actually in a position above you, at least in business. So you're going to find yourself in one of those three situations. Now let me tell you how to handle them. One of the most important things to remember, and folks, if you hear a little background noise coming down, going through a pretty good rainstorm here, but that's okay. The person who's going to pretty much be the winner in that situation is the one that's going to be able to accept and resolve that other person's anger. And there's several things that you have to do to be able to accept it and resolve it. Let's go through those. And there's basically 9 steps. The first is acknowledge the other person's anger quickly. Nothing adds more fuel to the fire in somebody's mind when they're angry than ignoring them or laughing at them. Don't do that. Just hear them out. Listen to angry people. Pay close attention to them. And, you know, observe their reactions, kind of look at their body language. And here's one of the most important things you can say. I realize how angry you are and how this must make you feel. When you say that, when you say, I realize how this makes you feel, they appreciate that. Even that simple step right there is going to start to diffuse the anger. Follow it up with step number 2. Make it plain that you're concerned about what they're angry about. Ambivalence is one of the worst things you can show somebody when they're angry. Say something like, well, you know, I don't blame you for being upset. I know this is a very important matter. I want you to know that I also take this very seriously too. And third, number 3, this is important. Don't hurry them. When they're spewing anger at you and when they've got to get something off their chest, let them talk. Be patient. Let them get it all up. Let them throw up on you. That's what they want to do, really. I mean, think about it. That's what they want to do. They want to throw up all over you. And I know this is tough. This is really tough for me. I don't want to do this, man. I don't want to just listen to all the crap that they've got to dump on me, but that's part of it. They just need to get it out. The fourth step is stay calm. Keep it cool. Many people express anger in such a general and an emotional way that it's difficult to understand really what's going on with them. But when they're in this state, it's very likely that they're going to say and do things that they don't really mean. Don't react to that. Just stay calm. Let those things that they say that they don't really mean, just let them pass and take them up after you've resolved the current problem at hand. There's always time later to deal with those mean and hurtful things that they said that they probably really didn't mean. But don't try to deal with those right on the spot. All you're going to do is throw gasoline on the fire. And I'm really hitting a good rainstorm here, folks. Starting to make me angry. Anyway, the fifth step is ask him questions. What you want to do here when you start asking him questions, this is after they've already dumped on you. Try to discover some specific things that you can do to help kind of calm their anger and remove their anger. Oftentimes, you got to have a lot of patience here, folks, because the angrier people get, the more likely they are to strike at a shadow of their anger than what really is the substance or the root of their anger. But just start asking them questions, because you're going to find out that most of the time what they say they're angry about is not really the most important reason. And the more questions you ask them, trust me, that reason will come out. All right. Now, by this time, they're probably starting to calm down a little bit. And I was doing this, you know, my son was angry about something a couple days ago. And I've memorized these steps. And so I just started, going through steps 1 through 5 here. And, you know, by the time I got to the question-asking stage, I don't want to get into details as to what he was angry about, but once I started asking him questions and asking him to elaborate, it turned out that what he really was angry about was nothing, it was not even closely related to the first thing that he started talking about. The sixth step is to try to get him talking about solutions. You know, how can we solve this? What are some realistic solutions that we can come up with so that, so that this issue doesn't come up again? And the seventh is once you start throwing around ideas as to what can the solution be to this angry episode, agree on just a couple of things. Pick two things that you can agree on, because you're not going to agree on everything. When you start throwing out solutions there, I promise, you know, hey, this person's angry, okay? So they're not going to want to agree with all the solutions that you throw out there. But after you know exactly what some of those are, agree on just a couple of them. Take baby steps. And the eighth one is very important. In fact, there's nothing worse than skipping step number 8 in dealing with an angry person. And this really chaps me. This is what really gets me going when I'm angry with somebody. And we finally agree on what a solution is going to be. Also, agree on a schedule. Set a schedule and a time frame as to when you're going to implement the solutions to the problem. Don't blow the person off. Step number 9, meet that schedule. If you guys agree that, let's say it's an argument with your spouse, and if you agree in 2 weeks, you're going to come up with a solution to the problem so that it doesn't happen again, by golly, when that 2-week period time frame comes, you better have your solution ready. Don't blow the person off, because I guarantee you, if you blow them off and you don't meet the agreement, they're going to be twice as angry, 3 times angrier the next time. So real quickly, number 1, acknowledge the person's anger. Let them know you understand it. Let them know that you're concerned. Step number 2, I don't blame you for being upset. Don't hurry them. Don't try to rush them into getting out what they want to say. That's step number 3. Stay calm is number 4. Be patient. Number 5, start asking questions. Remember, when you start asking the questions, sometimes they forget what it was that they were even angry about. Number 6, get them talking about solutions. Number 7, agree on 2 things. Just 2 things. Maybe even only 1. Number 8, agree on the time frame as to when you're going to bring this matter to a close. And then, number 9, meet that schedule. Do it when you say you're going to do it. This helps bring you more into emotional balance. So I've got more to say on this subject, but a few minutes, I'm going to go ahead and bring episode 25 to a close, because I want to leave you with just those two things. Build your get-to-town money. Build up that fund that gives you more negotiating power. Your go-to-town money, excuse me. Build up that fund that gives you the walk-away power in any decision in your life. And then learn how to deal, follow the 9 steps in dealing with angry people. The first, by getting building up your financial fund, that's going to help keep you more in financial balance. The second, dealing with the angry people, is going to help keep you more emotionally in balance. And I have some other ideas on the other 3 areas as well. But I want to close with this. I want you to repeat something after me. And so I'm going to say a phrase, and then I want you to just silently repeat it to yourself. Today, I hereby commit that from this day forward, I will never take advice from anyone more messed up than I am. Okay? Say that. Say that to yourself. I don't care. This is a little bit of self-talk you have to get involved in. But say, hey, I hereby commit that from this day forward, I'm never going to take advice from anybody more messed up than I am. Be careful who you listen to. Are they living the kind of life that you want to live? And that's all I'm going to say for now. And thank you for listening to episode 25. This is Bob Main, and you've just listened to another production of Today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want, not what somebody else wants you to live, and to strengthen your resolve. We make survival simple, not extreme. Thank you for tuning in. Keep your life in balance, and we'll catch you next time.